not live and coming to you from the fabulous Sunset Strip in Hollywood, California. It's the Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Now, because Kathy St. George, our fabulous co-hostess, was friggin' late yet again, we got to talk quick and get started. I don't want you to feel bad because you were late again. And, of course, Maybelline is here.
I have a good story, though.
we have time now. I want to welcome my good buddy John Welpley.
Thank you.
And my new friend, Mr. Anson Williams.
Hey there.
And thank you guys both so much for being on the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to it. And first of all, though, I want to first, ladies and gentlemen, which camera? Am I on this camera over here? I'm such a hater.
You mean the one camera?
The one. Well, there were two last week. Oh, you know what? I had my first paparazzi brush last week. Rocky Carroll from NCIS and a famed writer, director, performer of movies. He's hilarious. We went to Craig's to see Cindy for a drink. And he pulled in right next to me. And the paparazzi, there was like 30 of them. And of course, you know, being a celebrity, as you guys would know, you know, he grins and he walks through. And I, on the other hand, was like, yay, jumping up and down. They're like, who's the fat guy in the cowboy hat? Let's see. So we have 7,500 downloads on iTunes. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. We have just been added to the iHeartRadio group. Yay!
Yay!
Thank you, Sammy Junio, who just took a switch. She's like, oh. Sammy, John, everybody, thank you so much.
Joe.
Look forward to
Joe.
It. God damn it.
Can you say that?
And I'm on bad Joe's bad side right now because we're late. Please forgive me. You know I do that with everybody. My boyfriend's name is what's his name again?
Where'd he go?
Donald.
There's not enough room. He's not really my boyfriend, y'all. I'm really straight. I just tell the women I'm queer so they think they're safe. Suckers. Anyhow, I want to give a shout out to my buddy J.D. Hinton, who has been on the show before. He is going to be performing in New York City, you guys. The Songs of the Night album, it's at Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 3 in New York. Saturday, October 20th. There are people flying in from Los Angeles. JD's great. He performs at Vitello's. Well, you know. He's a good buddy of yours, too.
I may be going to New York.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to.
Well, I hope you can because I'm going to be in New York the 7th through the 14th, but I can't afford to stay that long. Mm-hmm. But we're real excited for JD. This guy is awesome. And there's 12 tickets left.
Yeah,
and there's a bunch of people from LA flying to the city to see it.
Yeah.
So it's on here's the Rockwood Music Tickets Hall link. Got ticks. I don't know what to say here, JD.
Got ticks?
Ticks. I had scabies once. But anyway,
I heard.
JD and Rick. Oh my gosh. JD, forgive me.
I'm losing weight here. I don't know about
that. I know.
Wait, from
anyway, that's all I can say. JD.
From the heat?
JD, I'm sorry. We just were all cackling because somebody was late. And I'm going to stop picking on you because you were late.
No,
again.
But it is my fault. But
how many times has she been late?
Every show.
No, I wasn't late.
Every
last
show.
Every.
I wasn't late last show.
You weren't.
No.
I wasn't much.
So
late.
This is a non-union production.
I was on time.
Oh.
I had.
Yeah, that's
I
why
have
every
a
guest gets a complimentary
bottle
of water.
They're making a TV show. They're making a TV show, and they have fake firemen on my fire escape, and I'm naked in the tub, and then I'm covering myself with a bath mat trying to get ready.
There's a visual.
They were filming. When I lived on South Beach, I lived at this great apartment building on 12th and Euclid, the Fenimore. It was with the first refurbished building. And there was some – what show? Oh, no, it was that movie years ago, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, what was that?
Oh, and Tom Arnold.
True Lies.
And they were filming a scene, and I had been up all night, of course, and I was probably doing the Walk of Shame from some bar. And, I mean, seriously, there were 1,000 people surrounding my building. And I'm like, get out of it. The guy's like, you can't go that way. I'm like, fuck you.
That's what I've been doing.
And they're like, cut. I walked right through the front, and I put my little key in and went to the building. I was like, screw them. But anyway, thank you all for coming and listening to the Bob Dean Show and watching. Thanks to Joe White. John Welpley, Anson Williams, thank you for being here. Yay.
Yeah.
You guys are old friends, right?
Yes. We're very old friends.
I understand.
Well, he's old.
Well, you.
But I'm a friend.
You're the end of friend.
Well, John is not only a pal, but he's also one of my better bar customers. He's low maintenance and high tipping.
Ah.
And your lovely gal, Shelly.
Yes.
She's another pip. We just love her. And you guys just bought a big old horse together, right?
Yeah. Well, I bought a horse, and she's going to train.
What was the thing you said? Well, because Shelly is a horse trainer.
Yes.
Man, she's the most resilient woman I think I've ever known.
Yeah. Broken pelvis and collarbone, and 8 weeks later. And before that, you know.
Well, Hillary Roth, my good friend Hillary Highhill. Had a motorcycle fall on her. And that's a whole other story.
Wow.
Okay, so anyway, Anson Williams.
Yo.
Known for writing, singing, directing. Hmm. Happy Days, a lot of people recognize this guy from. What was it? Patsy Weber, but what was your – don't tell me because Marion Ross always called you by your given name.
Don't look at your notes.
I have to. I'm stupid.
Begins with a W.
Because I'm on his page.
Begins with a W.
I know. It's
William?
No. Yeah. Warren.
Wow, good guess.
I don't even remember.
That's what
that
it says on IMDb. Is that it, right, Warren?
Warren Weber.
Warren Weber. We're going to get into a Happy Days was a really cool show, but he knows that. You're an LA native.
I am.
Right?
I am. I was created in the Bronx, but during the pregnancy, they took a train out to LA.
So, what neighborhood do you call home?
Well, it started in East Los Angeles, Boyle Heights area. And then my dad got a GI loan for a house, really teeny house in Burbank, back in the day,
which now is worth $1.2 million.
Unbelievable!
I'm sure.
Yeah, literally a $15,000 house.
Yeah, exactly. It's
one bathroom, three bedrooms. I mean, like whatever. And everyone could have. But back then, anyone could have a house. You really could.
Exactly.
It wasn't a big deal.
I was
a fair country
in Levittown, Pennsylvania. The planned suburban community. That's where my father bought his first home on a GI loan.
Yeah.
And it was up like a $15,000, and it was state-of-the-art creative living then.
Yeah. All I can say is this. Back then, because we grew up, it would be poor now. But back then, I guess it was lower middle class, $100 in the bank. I mean, really nothing.
Oh, I know.
But every friend of mine, including my best friend, whose dad was a butcher at the supermarket, not a manager, a butcher. Just, they had a house, two-week vacation, a car. Everyone had a life. There were just basic things in your life that everyone had. Great parks, great programs, great schools.
Yeah, and public schools.
And there wasn't the pressure today. There was a chance to make it. There was a chance to move forward.
Well, the American
dream.
I can't
even tell you what's the upside downness of today.
It's absurd. It's frightening.
It's destructive.
And hello. And that's my whole thing about this. Not to get political.
You can.
But I don't like to, but because it just takes up too much time.
Yeah.
But one thing, all the issues of everybody, whether you're pro-Trump or anti-Trump, okay, as much bashing as we spend doing that, why aren't we talking about the fact that nobody's going to be able to afford to live in 20 years?
It's not politics.
You know?
I can't afford it now.
No, it's greed. It's choices.
Absolutely.
And, you know, everyone talks about it. It's so funny. You know, oil and this and that. You know, our founding fathers, I mean, literally, when they put this together, it was to make – here's the freedom to make right choices. Years ago, we could have made a choice other than oil. We could have made a better choice that became the livelihood of the country.
Absolutely.
But we didn't. So you're stuck with this, you know, destructive product that's now in 18 areas of – and you can't get rid of it because the economy depends on
Absolutely.
It. Absolutely. So we're betwixt and between. Mm-hmm. We made really poor choices. And then when things could be changed, greed didn't make it happen.
And what did I tell you the solution is? A good extraterrestrial visit.
Yeah.
That's
No, I'm serious. We need the world to stop. We need something that stops, literally.
It makes everyone.
Stops the world.
Together.
Somebody's got to come down and
stops
sort it
the
out.
World and just, you know, almost like, remember the moon landing? That moment stopped the world. I mean, it's got to be something so large just to clear your head.
The Black Plague
just
did
to
that
be
too.
Receptive.
Yeah.
What's that?
The Black Plague did that too.
That's true,
and
too.
That,
yeah.
That could happen.
Well, anyway,
welcome to the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah.
We talk about whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, but honestly,
it's like the documentary, the Saturn EV1, for example. Okay, the first electric car, and of course Nissan Leaf, blah blah blah. They're getting the credit for the introduction of the electric car to the mass market.
Right.
When in fact in 1991 was it the EV1, which was essentially a Saturn, was introduced into the Los Angeles as a prototype market, and the car was so friggin' perfect that they squelched it.
Yep.
Right.
And there's
they made people give them back.
Yeah, they made them give them back.
You couldn't buy them.
A great a documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car.
Right.
And it's absolutely brilliant. And it's infuriating at the same time. Mm-hmm. But
that's why we have documentaries.
You know, it's off YouTube now. And I don't know why it's off YouTube, but a few years ago, there were videos on there. Japan had approved these few vans, and they were water engines. And literally, a full tank was a gallon of water. And it could run for hundreds of miles. And they approved it as a prototype. I mean, they literally have water engines. Literally have them.
Yeah. Well, that's all squelched by the.
But it's squelched because of the
follow the money. Deep throat was right. Yeah, you want the answer? Because of anything, follow the money.
You know, the worst of capitalism, which is before anybody.
You know, my father was, God rest his soul, he was a pioneer in plastics. Yes, everybody hates plastic now, but the point being is that he and three other guys were the they brought the concept of reaction injection molding to the United States, which is how plastic car bumpers are made, and they resist blah, 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 blah. And he spent many, many years in the 70s in Europe and Russia and France and Germany and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, when they came back, they were never heard of, per se. Yet, you know, they were like, you know, like the movie about, what's his name, that the windshield wipers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
the same sort of situation. That was a brilliant thing. Kevin Spacey.
No, that wasn't Kevin Spacey.
Ooh,
no,
can we say that name?
No, it was the guy that used to have the talk show, Duck Soup, and then he went into acting.
Joe McHale.
No, before him.
And he's a really good actor.
We love him.
He was in one of Gary Marshall's movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kinnear. Greg Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear. Thank you.
I like that.
That's a great movie. He does the – it's the story of the independent creator who developed
the automatic windshield.
Automatic wipers. Yeah. And then it was stolen, blah, 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 blah. Okay, anyway, back to you guys. And Kathy, you were late, but damn, you look good.
But the firemen were really cute.
well, however, hell, that's a good
idea. I almost lit myself on fire.
Hello, speaking of lighting yourself on fire.
Where is that damn? I brought it.
You know, I knew I went in the wrong profession.
Here it is.
You know, firemen.
That's a cute
even story. Fake ones. Oh,
seriously.
Here it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
The Kathy St. George Playboy Edition lighter.
That's me.
Yeah, no, smoking, huh, baby? All right, enough of that. Whoa.
He starts fires with that.
I start fires with anything. I'm a pyro. Just kidding. They're looking for me in 7 states. You have written for everything, television, movies. You've done how many Beverly Hills 90210 episodes
That's how
have
we met.
You done?
On 90210, we had to do 32 episodes a year.
Really?
Where most shows were doing 22 or 13, and now they're doing 6.
It was called Double Ups at the time.
Yeah, Double Ups.
Double Ups.
Wow.
Yeah.
Had to prep two directors.
Yeah. Now, did you write or direct for any of the show you've written, you've worked together on 90210?
Mm-hmm. That's how we met.
When I was taking, I'm like 2 credits away from 5 different degrees. You need to realize. But I was taking classes at National State Technical Institute in Nashville, Tennessee. And I was in the student union one night. And I picked up a soda and, you know, put down my backpack. I was all like 34 then, so I was old as shit. And I just happened – I made – there's like 15 people sitting around looking at this this television. And I go, Beverly Hills 90210. I didn't know that show was still on. And like 4 people looked at me like I had like slapped their dog. And this one guy goes, this show shaped a generation. And I was like, well, I think it's time for me to move on to the next class.
I was just trying to make a deadline every week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that was just that show did shape a generation.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't me, though.
Made me want to come to Los Angeles.
I feel kind of guilty now.
Yeah, thanks.
Well,
Sean.
Mine was the Wonder Years. Absolutely. Yeah, couldn't have been more of how I grew up.
Yeah, wonderful narrative.
Okay, so you now are you writing a lot of Hallmark movies? And we had a discussion at the bar the other night. No, which was interesting. I love how you can cross your eye and cross one eye. What does it look?
Yeah. Okay, now I have a question, though.
Yes, sir.
You said you had 2 drinks in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah.
How many drinks did he have the other night?
One. That was one of the 2.
Oh. And I was like,
damn,
please.
I thought I got you,
John, and I'm thinking, John, I love you, but please get your ass out of that bar stool so I can.
Oh, yeah, so you can make some money.
No, he had one, really. John pops in. This is one thing about John. He's a great guy, but he's a friggin' responsible drinker. Who needs
it?
You
know,
an Irishman, that's saying
something. I know.
Yeah.
I think I don't ever think I've seen you have more than 2 drinks during the whole time watching a ball game with your pals or anything like that.
You hear that, Shelley? So
it's true.
I only had 2 left.
You know, I'm a lot of things, but I ain't no liar. Mm. And like I said, and my motto is: if you have an airbag, have another.
Yeah,
it's a big friggin' deal, right?
But your car's bigger.
I asked my father why he drank so much one time. He said, because, son, it makes your mother absolutely charming.
Uh-huh. I told the story a long time ago about the braid, you know, as I said, Wonder Years style life. But my mother with her tortoiseshell cat eye glasses that were curved, you know, she was very cool, Stella. And I'll never forget, I was watching an episode.
One of my daughter's names.
Yeah, Stella. It's a beautiful name. Yeah. And I'm sitting in the den watching the Brady Bunch. And I was sitting Indian style, which, of course, I couldn't do now. You know, because my anyway, I remember my mother leaning in the hallway in her slacks and her blouse, and she's smoking a Benson Hedges, and she very kindly, she goes, honey, I just want you to know that that's not real life. And I'm like, what do you mean, Mom? She goes, well, first of all, I'm never going to wax the floor in pearls. Second of all, you kids are never going to run around singing in harmony. And third of all, sometimes your dad's going to pull in the driveway drunk. Do you know Mike Brady always pulling that convertible, grabbed his briefcase, and was like, din, 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 din.
Oh, God.
Do you know, I was in Neiman Marcus, and Barbara Billingsley walked in, and she dressed, I swear to God, she's dressed perfect just like she did.
Oh, yeah.
As
she's still in character.
Totally.
Well, did I ever tell you my Barbara? I know that the listeners to the Bob Dean Show. Yay. Yeah. I've heard the story 100 times, but Barbara Billingsley was my first celebrity encounter here in Los Angeles.
Really?
Oh, so let's tell the story again. She was 93 if she was a day, and her family owned Billingsley's restaurant on Pico.
Oh, wow.
And when my first job was delivering sandwiches for Nelly's Deli, which is a fabulous place, a little plug for Nelly's Deli in West LA. And the owner, Sally, comes back, and I'm back there, you know, doing roll-ups or whatever it was. And it was great because that's how I learned my way around West Los Angeles. And she made a comment. She's like, "Oh, Barbara Billingsley's sitting out there." And the kids are like, "Who?" And I go, "Barbara Billingsley, really?" And she goes, "Yeah, you want to meet her?" And I go, "Oh, my God, please." And I'm like, "Okay." She's like, "Okay." So we go out, and she was with a gentleman. And this is a tiny little casual cafe. And she was dressed to the nines. She was old as dirt, but looked fabulous. And she had just taken a little bite of her sandwich, and Sally goes, "Miss Billingsley, this is Bob Dean. He's just moved to town, and he'd like to say hello." And she, you could see the twinkle in her eyes. She's like, "Okay, like just a minute." She's dabbing her lips with the napkin, and I go, "Hello, Miss Billingsley. My name is Bob Dean. I just moved here from Nashville, Tennessee. Leave It to Beaver was one of my favorite shows. My favorite episode was one where you give Beaver money to get his haircut, but he lost it. So while he shaved his head and he had a skull cap, then Ward took it off, and you almost screamed, but Ward put his hand over your mouth. It was so nice to meet you." And the whole time I'm saying this, her eyes are getting wider and wider and wider. And I just walk away like, dee, dee, dee. I go back in the kitchen. I'm like, Sally comes back and goes, "What the hell was that?" I go, "I was starstruck."
Oh, that's funny.
Now, friggin' Madonna could sit down at the bar and they're like, "You need to scoot down one, girl."
Right. Oh, yeah.
Barbara
yeah.
Billingsley, man, that was awesome. Yeah.
It is. Because she was just like you thought she would be, you know?
Yeah.
Perfectly poised.
She actually had a beach house in Malibu right by the pier.
Really? Oh,
yeah. Yeah, just south of the pier. Those
yeah,
older
those four
the
houses.
First, yeah, yeah, one of those were her forever. Oh. And I think she was married to a successful banker.
That helps.
Yeah.
Well, she was a beautiful woman.
She's yeah. like really adored. She,
God, my
she
first celebrity encounter was Fred Gwynne.
Oh, no I kidding? Love him.
He was in costume, too.
Tell us about it.
You know, the Universal Tour. My dad takes the seven kids, or at that time four, I think, the four that were born in New York. And I'm just looking up at the tallest man in the world. And he's got a vein running up his arm. And I'd never forget that, you know, he worked at a mortuary, right? And I just borrowed a line for the Hallmark thing I'm writing. And, you know, when Yvonne DiCarlo, a beautiful woman, calls and says, "How's things going?" He says, "Oh, business is great. People are just dying to get in." He's doing flowers and coffins.
Oh, that's funny.
So,
well, it's so funny that you brought that up, too, because I was watching Dennis and I were watching an episode of Bonanza this afternoon. And Ted Cassidy, a.k.a. Lurch.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, but he was, of course, you know, he was a cowboy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, why was that guy? And then, of course, you look at the jawline and the head, and then he speaks, and I'm like, holy crap, that's Lurch.
I know.
Yeah.
Now, Dennis, who plays starring Dennis the Menace?
Jay North.
Okay, that was my first celebrity encounter.
Really?
Where I was this little kid, a number in the world, like I said, you know, just a basic life, and we're at the Sportsman Show, at what used to be the Convention Center in L.A., and we're there, and I'm looking around. And they had back then. They had celebrities. You could you pay to get your picture taken.
Right, right, right.
And so, but we didn't have the money. So I'll never forget the manager of the event said had a cigar and said, and he was up high, "I'm going to hit this wiffle ball with a golf club. Whoever catches it gets free picture." I caught it. I caught the freaking wiffle ball.
In the air. And I went like this. Michael
then I was
Jordan.
Scared to death. I was still nervous. And I went up there, but I'll never to this day. I've never been face-to-face to thank this man now. I was so scared shitless. He went out of his – I'll never forget this. He was younger than me at the time, but made me feel great, put his arm around me. What's your name? Like literally made me feel
that's really
so
nice.
Nice. Way beyond what he had to do because he saw I was like scared to death. None of the other guys – there are all these other old –
How
actors.
Old do you think you were possibly?
10.
Mm.
You know, maybe he was 10, 11, something like – you know, not – But really insecure.
But I mean,
But Jay North, at that, but I remember that. my entire, it was such an important moment Aww. Because it could have gone so bad. He made me feel so good about myself. And that, and when Happy Days hit later, trust me, that moment had a lot to,
I was just going to say.
I paid it back because I know, because all of a sudden I'm Jay Norton. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm, the, and it never, and that, the sensitivity to people. Mm-hmm. And how fragile people can be, never left.
So he kind of prevented you from seriously. Turning into an asshole.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
No, you know? But I mean, but seriously. I
that's
just,
a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that with us, honestly. When that's, no, that's great.
When people come, even though you're just an actor, you're just this, but to a lot of people, there's an emotional attachment. And you really want that. You're, it's important to make them feel good.
Yes, because there are those that make you feel really bad.
Yeah, like no names mentioned, Diana Ross.
Well, and that's just – that's unhappy people making other people unhappy. But, mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, that's part of your – you should actually innately want to do that. You're a storyteller, you're a communicator. You want – you know, it's not hard to be nice to people. But it's a powerful, powerful asset. Yeah.
We were talking at lunch about you can view Hollywood, you know, this business of entertainment as a business of rejection. And how well do you handle rejection? Mm-hmm. And I used to have an x-ray of my spine that I framed and put in my office. And when people would come in, they'd go, is that an x-ray? And I said, yeah, that's my spine. That's to remind me I still have one. You know, because that's persevering through tons of rejection to get the yes, whether you're auditioning, whether you're writing a script.
But you have your career as a writer has always been steadfast and great. And that's what we're talking about with the.
I've had some peaks and valleys.
Well, peaks and valleys, of course. I shouldn't say steadfast or great, but you were talking about we were talking about that you're writing a lot of the Hallmark movies.
Well, I'm starting to. Yeah.
Well, you're starting to, and you know, there a lot of people think they're really hokey, but it was exactly what we said. It was like
they're,
you know,
family.
What people that just face it. They're friggin' sick of you know the violence and the nudity, and it's not because I'm getting old. It's just because it's in bad taste. It's tacky.
Yeah.
And at least these stories are nice, you know, and they're wholesome. They're, I mean, there's a little too many Christmas ones back to back.
But that whole Christmas thing, it's huge business for them.
I had 2.5 million like viewers so many on my garage of fans. Sale mystery last week or whatever.
Oh, wow. And the garage sale mystery,
Lori Loughlin.
Yeah.
2.5 million viewers overnight.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, was that yours? Other than Walking Dead, you know. Getting 14 million or whatever, you know.
Well, you've done Baywatch, and this in 902. I'm talking about a long time ago, but still, Charlie's Angels, Fantasy Island. I mean, that shaped a generation, baby. Charlie's Angels,
Fantasy Island.
Oh Fantasy Island. Well, Fantasy Island. You know, the plane. We all got that.
Yeah.
But Charlie's Angels. Please.
My girlfriend was an
Angels on Skates, I think it was.
You wrote Angels on Skates. That's the
Disco
one.
Disco Angels.
No, it was Angels on Skates. Oh. But you were
my
saying?
My girlfriend was a body double for Cheryl Ladd. But also,
really?
So she got to be in a lot of the shows because they'd stick her in.
You know, Cheryl Ladd was in the first year of Happy Days.
Was she really?
She guest starred.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was the prom.
She's working a lot now.
Yeah, but yeah, before Cheryl Ladd.
Wow.
Yeah. I was trying to get her on Dallas when we did the reboot of Dallas. And
she wouldn't do it?
No. We ran out of steam, you know, when Larry Hagman died. It kind of ran out.
Yeah, because that was 2013?
Yeah.
Around that time?
Yeah.
Because the kid that played on, that played J.R. Jr., wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, Josh Henderson.
He was the kid that was on Desperate Housewives, right? Yeah. That played the
Oh, no, that Carter. Was... the other kid, I can't remember his name now. It will come to me later. But there were two sons, you know. But they were fine actors, really. Jesse Metcalf.
Oh, that's it. Yeah,
Jesse
yeah.
Metcalf, right.
And he did that one lousy movie about about the teenager. It was one of those kind of a somebody must die.
Yeah, something must die. Yeah.
Well, he was like this big stud, and he just went around crushing everybody's ego and attitude and hearts. Yeah. And then they got even with him, and then it turned out where everybody was, you know. And then
there's a whole generation of love
songs. Sounds like one of your scripts, John.
No, right?
It's a generation that I helped nurture through 90210 that became a generation of retribution.
Uh-huh. Well, you know how that Brenda and her twin brother, what's his name, Harold or
See, I can't even remember.
Because they had the family that everybody could come to, and all the other celebrity, wealthy families were all screwed up. They could always go to the whatever their house was. Yeah. I never watched it. Hey, you know what? Your uncle invented the Heimlich maneuver.
Yeah, he's actually my second cousin, but I've called him uncle since I was born, Dr. Heimlich. Yeah,
yes.
In fact. because of Happy Days, literally, the Heimlich maneuver was on national television for the first time.
Really?
Interesting story.
That's fabulous. Could
well,
go.
He was well, Dr. Heimlich, he was getting regional promotion for the maneuver, but the Red Cross hated him. There's a whole political thing. And, you know, the Red Cross still would only say to slap the back. And they really stopped a lot of PR for the Heimlich maneuver. And he was having a time. And he happened to be visiting me on the Happy Day set. And I got a phone call from the Griffin Show. I had guessed it a couple of times. And they said that someone dropped out. Would I be available that night? Sing a song and be interviewed. I thought, sure, yeah, okay. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to maybe plug the Heimlich maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to, I went That's to Hank. Great. I said, Hank, maybe we can figure out something. Murph seems like a nice guy. Maybe I can talk to him. Maybe we can get this going. I said, let's go together. So we went together that night. He sat in the audience while we're rehearsing and all this, and no Merv. He says, rehearse a song, no Merv. Can't find him. He's busy. So I thought, well, we gave it a shot. So the show starts, and then it's my turn. I sing the song, and then you go over to be interviewed. Well, there's a break, commercial break. So during the commercial break, I had like an elevator pitch to Merv. Dr. Heimlich, Heimlich maneuver, and he goes, wait, I've heard about that. I've read about that somewhere. So, and the lights come up, and well, whatever. Out of the blue, he said, you know, there's a Dr. Heimlich in the audience, da-da-da. He brings him up on stage, does the maneuver on Merv. It airs a few nights later. It was, they delayed their shows or the next night. Huge response. 3 weeks later, he's on the Carson Show and it exploded.
Wow.
But if it wasn't for Happy Days, being on the set at that moment, at that time, who knows how long it would have taken.
You know what? Thank you to
I used it on my sister.
Yeah. It saved so many lives.
Carpet cleaners everywhere, I've been thinking. Yeah.
But true story.
No, that's amazing. It's amazing. And I am proud to say that I have saved 3 lives.
There you go.
Being in the restaurant business, 3 in the last 7 years.
But how great is that? And here's this man. And you know what? Talk about a legacy. He lives every day saving lives. Mm-hmm. He passed away almost 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. 96 years old. I mean, he had a good life.
And the thing about it is that and CPR, it's so easy to do.
Yeah.
But it's like, and it's so, it's just, and the thing about it is too, is when, I don't know, like I said, seriously, 3 times, and everybody around is panicking and they're doing this slapping on the back thing.
I know.
And you know, and I don't know, I just walk over to him and I'm like, just move. And I'm like, can you breathe? And the person's like, oh, and then you just do it. And by the 3rd or 4th time, some big hunk of something comes flying out.
That's
right?
No, that's what it is.
I only pat them on the back if I don't like them.
I know, right? And look, like, it'll be fine, honey.
You must discern. Yeah.
See what happens when you swallow.
Anyway, well, and also he, you know, and he's saving lives too with another situation he found the cure for. And I'm part of this. A couple of decades ago, I was directing Slap Maxwell with Dabney Coleman, and we were in the local desert, Palmdale, and it was a hot day, exhausting day. And driving home, I blacked out. I fell asleep. Ended up bouncing around the desert, almost killed myself. It came on so sudden. And I told Henry about it, Dr. Heimlich, and Dr. Heimlich is an expert on how the body helps the body. He knows how everything works. He said, Anson, keep cut up lemons with you. He said, if you ever feel that exhaustion again, bite into it hard. He said the citric acid with the sour lemon will hit the lingual nerve in the middle of your top of your tongue, and the automatic reflex reaction of the body's adrenaline. You're up, nothing in your system, and your body waking the body. So I did that for many, many years. Never had the problem. And then through the years, aside from entertainment, I've been very entrepreneurial. I went in the product business. And I love creating problem-solving products. And we must now have over 50. We were on QVC for a decade and then every mass market.
Some of the products being?
What? Oh, my gosh. everything from microperlebration, which is crushed pearl, to clinically proven cream called Cool Flash for the Hot Flash, which brings down the skin temperature in 2 places, back of your neck, top of your, and it instantly brings down the body temperature and leaves a hot flash. No hormones, all natural, clinically proven. So we all these amazing problem-solving products.
How do we find out?
That's just alert drops.
So then I'm looking up how catastrophic drowsy driving is in this country.
This
is, it's up there with guns. There's more fatalities, more injuries, more tragedies than drunk driving and medicated driving combined. 250,000 drivers a day fall asleep beyond drowsy.
Unbelievable.
A day. Millions, 68 million a year. 168 million drowsy drivers a year. It is catastrophic. It is way up there with the top three of killing people. And in this crazy world today, I thought, you know, where we don't feel we have control, we have control of this. So I call up Dr. Heimlich and I said, what if we made an alert, like a spray with the right amount of citric acid, the right amount of sour lemon, where we just spray drop right on the nerve? He goes, oh my God, do it. It will save more lives in the maneuver. So we created alert drops. And we've already, you know, prevented so many tragedies.
How do we find them?
Go to alertdrops.com, and that gives
alertdrops.com.
Alertdrops.com. It's all natural. You'll read the science behind it. You'll read the problem. You'll read Dr. Heimlich's story, and you can either buy it there or go to Amazon and buy it. Or if you don't want to buy it, at least have cut up lemons with you. If you have an exhausting job and you need clarity, or you're driving long distances, or it's a late night, have some lemons with you. And if you feel tired, for God's sakes, bite into it.
I bought a bunch before my first Hallmark movie came out. It really helped.
Didn't help the movie.
Really? Maybe they could send one with each movie. No, thank you. That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And see, on the Bob Dean Show, we not only have fun, but we learn good things.
It's important. I mean, we need gun control. Yeah, we need – but this is something – I mean, this is so preventable. And what's really – and if you go to Google Image, don't do it. Don't go to Google Image and go, families killed by drowsy drivers. It's not – people who killed innocent people because they fell asleep. And you'll see kids – you will cry yourself to sleep. I mean, it is devastating what can be prevented.
Especially with people on a night shift that work odd hours that.
We're also finding anyone out there with college kids. The big problem there isn't drowsy driving. It's late night studying. And they're getting themselves sick by drinking too much caffeine.
The energy drinks.
Yes, they're ending up in the hospital. Alert Jobs has been helping a lot in terms of the study situation there. 38% of college students have a problem.
So any time you need to
be clear-headed, awake, and safe.
Please repeat that website again, because unfortunately we're going to have to start wrapping things up.
Oh, but alertdrops.com.
Alertdrops.com. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
How much time do we have left?
None. 5 minutes. Okay. Is there anything else you want to – please.
We can do – should I do a cool story?
Yeah, if we have 5 minutes, take off, baby.
Do you like Elvis?
Do I like it? I love
– Elvis Presley. I have an Elvis Presley story.
Yes, nobody, please.
It's in my book. No one knows it.
I love
it. I'm the only one he told it to ever in life.
Please tell us. Please tell us.
I'm in rural Louisiana. I'm doing a cerebral palsy telethon at one end of a parking lot in a little television station there. On the other end of the parking lot is the Civic Center. And Elvis Presley's doing a concert there that same night. And they said, do you want to be – I won't get into all – I don't have time to tell the details, but I end up being, you know, asked if I wanted to meet Elvis. He was going to meet one of these CP kids as he came out the stage door to his Lincoln limo. So also I run across the – in Monroe, Louisiana. I'm running across the parking lot. Sure enough, Elvis comes out. It's a few years before his death. Doesn't look great. Nicest – so kind to this young man. He made the kid feel like a star, put the scarf around him.
He was a kind man.
So kind. Comes to me, goes, I really like the way you sing, Anthony. You've heard me? Oh, my, you've heard? So great to me. And it turned out, an African-American man by the name of Willie Turner, who was my janitorial boss in high school, changed my life around. He's the first person to talk to me, not at me. This unsung hero made my life. If it wasn't for this man's heart, you know, I wouldn't be here today. And his favorite artist in the world was Elvis. And I told Elvis the story. And Elvis said, you know, he started crying. He goes, I had a Willie. He said, I came out of high school. I'm working in this factory, electronics company, and I didn't know if I wanted to record. And I sang. And I had this African-American gentleman next, his Willie was there, saying how good he was. He should move forward. He gave me the confidence to move forward. I had my own Willie. Wow. And he ended up hugging this kid. Giving me a hug, going in the Lincoln, going in his, you know, his limo and driving off. It was like, you know, like the end of a movie. Hmm. And I think I'm the first one to ever write about that story. I don't think anyone ever knew who his hero was. And it wasn't some billionaire. It was some factory worker that had the magic to connect with him, for him to move forward. That's why and it taught me, your hero's not going to be a billionaire, a movie star. It's going to be the unsung person that just connects, and it's going to give you the magic to move forward. Don't judge anybody.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that, Anson. That was beautiful. Really. Damn.
Yeah.
Elvis, I've heard a couple of people that I've known through living in Nashville have had brushes with him, and it's always been something that's so incredibly touching and wonderful. But, man, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Very personal and very beautiful story.
Yeah.
And thanks, Elvis. Who was your – Willie?
Willie Turner.
Willie Turner. Thank you, Mr. Willie Turner and his family for bringing the –
That's why Anson wrote the book about
Tell us about the book. We got to go. Yeah. But tell us the book real quick.
Well, Singing the Bulldog, actually, I mean, it has all these crazy – it's like Forrest Gump stories, getting kidnapped by the President of the United States daughter in the White House. President of the United States daughter in the White House. I literally was kidnapped out of the White House by the daughter, by Susan Ford. Oh, but all these stories, meeting Elvis, but every story had a bigger story. Willie used to call the janitorial room the talk room, and that's where we had our conversations. And he gave me so many life lessons. I wanted to bring everybody into the talk room to have the same opportunity to have Willie's wisdom. And that's and Singing the Bulldog. It's a long story why it's titled that. But everyone gets a chance to meet Willie, and everyone gets the same opportunity to same lessons.
Would you do me a favor? Will you guys come back on so we can talk about the book in detail?
Sure.
And I'll just spend the night here. So.
Yeah, right. And I'm union. No, seriously. So it'll have to
thank
be 30
you.
Days.
Thank you guys very, very much because we're out of time in the studio. It's a tight studio here in Hollywood, the Ruby Studio, 7518, right, Sunset Boulevard. I don't know what else to say. I'm going to plug myself real quick. I will be at the Laugh Factory with Suna Kronquist and the Laugh and the LA School of Comedy crew on October the 1st, Monday night. I am just so pleased and honored to have both of you guys here, and always you.
Joe, you have to wait for good things.
And seriously, we'll do a whole other show because I would really love to talk about the book and everything else that you guys, your longtime friendship, et cetera. But we're just damn out of time on the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah.
Look, the big clock's clacking, 4:58. We have 2 minutes to wrap it up and get out of here. That's our time. Thank you all very, very much. Remember now that we are on iHeartRadio. Thank you, George Norrie. Thank you, George Norrie, and Darren Davis and Chris Peterson for hooking us up. Thank you, Sammy, and everybody for the iTunes count. And my website, bobdestroylycomic.com. Thank you, Zach Herndon. Thanks, Dennis Olson. We're done.
Thanks, Dennis.
Yay!